This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Phoebe Judge. The General Assembly's budget proposal is headed to the House after a late night in the Senate. That chamber passed the $21 billion spending plan around 1 this morning and then adjourned for the session. But senators left some bills on the table, including a plan to clean up Duke Energy's coal ash ponds and a proposal to overhaul Medicaid. Joining us from the General Assembly are WUNC Capitol reporter Jorge Valencia and WUNC's education policy reporter Rima Crace. Jorge and Rima, thanks for joining us after such a long night.
Thanks.
Hey, Phoebe.
So, Rima, the Senate approved the budget. Tell us about the debate last night and what's happening right now.
Yeah, the Senate approved the budget, and right now it's in front of the House, and they've been picking it up, or they've been debating it this morning, and I believe it's going on right now, and they're likely, as you mentioned, to vote on it tomorrow morning. And really the main issue has been education and teacher pay. I mean, legislators since day one of the session have been saying that teacher pay is their number one commitment, and they finally come together and come up with this proposal of an average 7% raise for teachers, which they're very proud of. Earlier today, Republican Representative Nelson Dollar was on the floor talking about that commitment.
When we started this year, we made a commitment to raise teacher pay, but to do more than that. We wanted to raise starting pay because we want the brightest and the best of North Carolina to consider teaching a worthy position.
And as I said, that's the average 7% raise, but some folks have been saying that fact that figure is a little bit misleading. So to be clear, almost all teachers will see a raise, but teachers earlier in their careers, let's say 5 to 10 years, will see pretty big increases. I mean, if you are a teacher has been teaching for 5 years, you could see an increase of about up to 18%. But teachers later in their careers, veteran teachers, may only see increases of 1%.
Democratic Representative Larry Hall said this morning that these raises are disproportionately low for teachers, that while it is helping those who are just starting, it's really those that are in the middle and have been around for a long time that are kind of getting the short end of the stick. Let's hear him talking about that.
Sure. We're taking longevity pay away from experienced teachers, taking money out of their pocket that they would normally get, and then we tell them, this is a pay raise for you. Now, you know when you're being rained on, and you know when there's some other substance in the mix. This is not rain, and they know it.
So, Rima, how does the budget offset those costs for teacher raises? Because it is a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. In the Senate plan, it was very obvious where they were getting the money from. They were looking to cut teaching assistants in second and third grades. But in this budget proposal, there isn't one place that takes a really huge hit. I mean, it comes from cuts to health and welfare programs, and there are cuts across government agencies. They're also covering some ongoing expenses on a short-term basis with one-time funding. They also rely heavily on lottery proceeds to fund some teacher positions. And then they also dipped into savings. So it's pretty much everywhere.
Jorge, let's move on to something that the budget that the House and the Senate have not agreed on, and that's Duke Energy's coal ash ponds. There was a lot of talk about this during the short session. Will you remind us what was in the bill?
Yeah, this was one of the both leadership in the House and in the Senate said it was one of their top priorities for the session. It was one of the very first, if not the first bill that was introduced during the session. And it sought to figure out how to deal with 33 coal ash ponds that Duke Energy has across the state. There was a massive spill in February in the town of Eden. There was about 39,000 tons of ash that spilled into the Dan River. And so that immediately triggered the attention of lawmakers here. And so they said, we're going to figure out how to do it. Eventually, what the House and the Senate wound up coming up with was they both had plans that demanded from Duke to handle the 33 ponds within 15 years. And then they had like a three-tier system, like the highest priority, the most dangerous ones, the mid priority, and the lowest priority. So that depending on where they fit in there, Duke would have to handle them pretty quickly and either take out all of the ash and take it somewhere else so that it would be nowhere near water, or potentially just drain the water that's in the pond and just cover the ash that's left there.
Well, let's hear Republican Senator Phil Berger give an explanation. He gave this explanation last night about why the Senate did not go forward with the coal ash bill. Let's listen.
What I think my constituents would be concerned about is if I were pursuing a bill that I couldn't tell them what the consequence of the bill was. I couldn't tell them whether or not, as a result of this, we've strengthened the protections that are needed for our drinking waters and our rivers.
So, Jorge, why did the negotiations break down, and will they return to it?
Yeah, so just really quickly, I mean, this gives you a sort of a taste for how things happen here in the General Assembly. And it's kind of a reminder that we've got a bicameral system. I mean, the leadership in both chambers is Republican, but the House and the Senate couldn't come to an agreement. What Senate Leader Berger was saying was that almost at the 11th hour, at the last minute, the negotiators from the House brought forth a new provision that his staff couldn't figure out what the impact would be. And so he said, well, if I don't know what the impact's going to be, then, you know, I'm not going to approve this because, you know, I'm not going to put something into law that I don't know, that is unpredictable. On the other hand, the House conferees were saying, you know, that they were trying to demand basically stricter standards for Duke Energy. In particular, it was pertaining to how, this coal ash could interact with water that's underground. So they couldn't come to an agreement. I mean, they said that they were at a logjam. And, you know, this is an issue that they sort of put aside. And, you know, they're going into adjournment right now. And they said they're going to come back to in November after the election.
Jorge, the Senate did approve a bill that limits local sales taxes last night. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the goal here is to cap sales taxes across the state at 7.25%. That's the max that it'll be, with some exceptions. There are some urban counties that wanted and had the ability, or still have the ability, because this is not law yet, to raise their sales taxes up to 7.5%. Now, Mecklenburg and Guilford counties have referendums on the ballot in November to do that. The voters have to approve that. Wake County and Forsyth County, which are two also, you know, vastly urban counties, have said maybe they want to do that, but they don't have that on the ballot. Now, there was some back and forth about this. First, you know, these counties wouldn't have been able to raise that to 7.5 at all. Now, this news version that they voted on last night says that, these four counties that will be an exception to that 7.25% cap will be able to raise it if their voters approve it. So, like I said, Charlotte and Greensboro could do it because they've already got it on the ballot. Wake County, what they're saying is, like, there's no way that we're going to be able to get a referendum on the ballot by November and be able to reach out to voters and let them know that this is there. So you're basically telling us we're not going to be able to raise sales taxes to 7.5%. Why do they want to raise that extra 0.25%? They say that they'd like to use some of that money potentially to join a partnership with Durham and Orange counties to create a light rail system here for the Triangle in upcoming years.
I'm speaking with WUNC's reporters Jorge Valencia and Rima Crace about this year's budget. This is the state of things. Rima, the General Assembly has been debating a bill about charter school regulations. Where does that stand?
Yes, it is in front of the governor right now. So this is a much revised bill that has had lots of edits in between the House and Senate. And essentially what it does is it says employees of charter schools, people need to know what they make and who they are. So it requires charter schools to disclose that information. Because charter schools are funded with taxpayer dollars, they say they should be held accountable in the same way that traditional public schools are. But it's a little bit complicated because there's language in there, or perhaps language that's not in there, that excludes some charter schools from disclosing that information. So some charter schools are contract with a management company, and there is language in there that doesn't necessarily say that they would have to disclose information of these employees and how much they make. And also, there isn't a provision in there, and there was a provision earlier in another version, but in the final version, there isn't a provision that ensures that charter schools cannot discriminate against students based on sexual orientation or gender identity. So it's a very controversial bill. Folks are saying that aside from the fact that it doesn't, aside from that LGBT issue, that there needs to be more transparency in charter schools, and this bill doesn't go far enough. And the governor has said before that he would veto a bill that doesn't make sure that charter schools are transparent and will disclose all the information.
Well, we will wait and see. House lawmakers plan to end their session, we think, in the next few hours or by tomorrow, we think. Yes?
Yeah. So the House is voting right now, or they're debating the bill and are likely to vote this afternoon. And then we'll see if they end up staying here pretty late tonight or if they come back Saturday morning to vote. And then they can head home before they have to come back in mid-August to pick up anything that the governor may have vetoed.
Well, we'll hope it's not such a late night for you both. Again, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phoebe.
Jorge Valencia is a Capitol reporter for WUNC. Rima Crace is WUNC's education policy reporter. Just ahead, a play about towns named Milton, including one in North Carolina. And we're taking your calls. Do you live in Milton or have you been there? Tell us about it at 877-962-9862. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.